Oh, how many of us wailing ones are driving around in cars because we can scream and scream and scream inside a safety dome, inside a cone of pining.
This is the When You Die podcast. If it has to do with death and dying, we're talking about it. Today's host is Kelly Edwards.
I'm Kelly Edwards, and our guest today is Sherry Fitch.
And this is part one of our conversation about grief.
Sherry is an author, storyteller, a poet, a bookstore owner. At least she was all those things until 2018. In 2018, Sherry's world fell apart because she lost her son, Dustin. And I think we talk about how grief changes people, and we're going to talk about Sherry, who Sherry was before she lost her son and after. And I'll leave it at that and just welcome you, Sherry. Thanks so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you for having me. And I think this is so important to have these conversations. So thank you.
I think you're right. And I think it's a helpful conversation. We talk about who Sherry Fitch was before 2018 and who Sherry Fitch is now. Do you want to tell me about that?
You know, I at one point said, when people say, how are you after Dustin died, I felt like they should have said, who are you? Not how are you? Because the truth is that the moment that phone call came, I say that I was, I was split in a million pieces. I was fragmented. And so I became what I call the undone. And Sherry was still there, but she was not in any way whole. And I feel it was 2 years in March that the process that I've been in is the process of regathering those pieces of myself that shattered that day and trying to find a way towards wholeness. And of course, the Sherry that I will be or am becoming again is a very different Sherry than the one I was before. Different, not better, not worse, but a very different and changed person. And, you know, I want to say, Kelly, that so many people, you know, where I come from, they'll say things like, oh, you know, this is so bad, like their husband died or their child died or whatever. And they'll go, you know, she was never the same after that. And I always just want to go, duh, like, excuse me. You know, we are changing, all of us, every morning we wake up. And as a person who's experienced the loss of a son, I wouldn't even begin to say I would not want to change. I mean, if I've discovered anything, it's that, yes, sorrow is a love story. Grief is a love song. And so I feel that I'm still in that process, to be really honest, Kelly. And, you know, and some days I feel more whole than others. And then there'll be a day where I don't say a bad day. I just say a day where all that intensity of emotion is there once more. And I'm a little undone again or unraveled again. So that's the difference, is that I think Sherry before felt she had more solid ground underneath her. Sherry now feels like I'm quite okay to dwell in those worlds in between and not even look for the solid ground underneath my feet, if that makes any sense at all.
Well, I think to anybody who has suffered grief, that makes absolutely perfect sense. And one of the things that we're talking about today is that you've actually... you're known as a children's writer, primarily an adult fiction writer, but you've written a book that is so real, and it is it's a book about grief. It's called You Won't Always Be This Sad. Mm-hmm. And it is there's so many things in it, Sherry, that so many lines that are so beautiful. And you said, you know, just now about love, grief being a love story. And you also had a thing that struck me, and it was this wild unraveling.
Yes. And it was wild. The landscape is completely foreign and unknown and wild. And I mean, you're in shock, you're in trauma. The brain does incredibly weird and wonderful, I think, things too, in that state, maybe protects us some. I mean, I am somebody who is very open to the fact that this world is not necessarily the only reality we dwell in. However, I had no familiarity. And so it felt like an unraveling. Like, and I know those first, I'd say 8 weeks, it felt sometimes, Kelly, that I had a 24/7 video playing inside my head, the speed at which I had no control. And there were flashes of memories that came up from so long ago, memories I hadn't even remembered. And it's all there. Obviously, the containers in our head that file those precious memories or the experiences that are shared. For me, my experience was I was like almost inert, but very, very busy in my mind. And there was a lot going on there. And also in my dream world at night. So the unraveling was very real, a very real and a very scary sense. And that's why I eventually went, yeah, the undone. That's because, you know, we often say we parents who've lost children, there's no word for us, right? There's mm-hmm. an orphan if children lose parents, there's a widow or widower. And what's the word for us? And I could only come up with the undone because it is
perfect.
Yeah, it feels right. And, you know, the writing of that book was one way. Kelly, at first I didn't want a pen in my hand at all. But, you know, I am mostly known for joy and for nonsense. And that's been my beat has been joy, you know, for most, and humor and most of that. Although in my 30s, I wrote a very serious adult book of poetry about women.
Yes.
And that was a book I wrote so I could move forward. This time it wasn't a sense of moving forward. It was a sense of moving deeper into the pain that I was in, which sounds really horrible, but I knew if I didn't face it and walk towards it, that I would spend the rest of my life running away from it. I'm 63. I knew that enough to know. And as the process went on, there's such beauty and so many gifts in the midst of the deepest sorrow. And for me, very early on, one night after my granddaughter was here, he had two children, a boy who's 12 and Emma who was 3 at the time. And she was here. And I would say that was probably my worst night. I had gone through a couple of weeks by myself. She came back, and because they had lived here with us on and off and quite, you know, spent months here and weeks here and lots of memories here, for me that was excruciating to have her here for the first time after he had died, because it was, where's daddy, why isn't daddy here, and those questions were just unbearable. And that night I can only describe it as this, Kelly, I went to such a pit of hell, but at the very bottom of it, I was flooded with a gratitude I have never known in my life. And it was a whoosh. It was a whoa. I am so grateful that I have loved this much and felt this much love, because my son, for all his challenges and everything else, he was a very loving, loving son and a shiny soul when he was a shiny soul. So very early on, I feel like I was kind of saved from that complete darkness, because I glimpsed at that immense love, that just being a gratitude. And it wasn't like I'm grateful that he's gone, but it was a gratitude for knowing that love. And knowing that that love was never going to go, that he, you know, in one sense, I think he is never very far away. And knowing that that is mine, you know, I can't hug him, he can't hug me, that really bugs me. Mm-hmm. And I have days I don't like that very much, but I have not lost the love.
And I think that really speaks to the that line again, that grief is a love story, because I don't want to get too far ahead of us, because you've written another poem that I want to touch on exactly in that vein about something else. But it's that, and if I'll give it away a little bit, the poem is called "Because We Love, We Cry."
Right.
And that is true. I mean, because the deeper the love, as anyone who's lost someone knows, that's yeah. The grief is love.
And, you know, you know, speaking about this too, like I think we're all in the midst of trying to become whole people. I mean, I don't think anybody's like got it all together and they're this integrated human being. I think that in every experience, whatever we're going through, you know, I hope the day that I die that I still go, oh, you know what I learned about myself this morning? And that's another little piece that I gather in and that I understand and that I, you know, so I feel like this, the sense of what I've gone through in these last 2 years, in a way, is a magnification of what life is. You know, it's that sense of how do we understand? What do we believe? What do we have faith in? I mean, there's not, I think there's a line, there's nothing like death to make you ask what you believe in or don't, right? And so how do we find the rituals that are meaningful? Who are the people we spend time with? Because boy, there's one thing about death. There's a clarity there. It's like you don't have, you know, I mean, it's, there's more compassion, you're cracked wide open, but I think you have less tolerance in a way to waste energy and waste time and waste breath. And I feel that very strongly.
Because it does show you, I mean, it really cuts away all the minutiae, doesn't it?
You find yourself going, it doesn't matter. Like, I feel like I'm finally starting to get back to it a little bit more normal. But Kelly, at first when people would start, like, you know, I would hear people like bitching about the weather and I go, are you serious? Like, are you freaking serious? Like, are you really real that you're complaining about something called weather, which is out of your control? And I mean, now I'm a little bit more normal when somebody has a little gripe about the weather. But at first, if you know, the world that I used to live in, where all those things supposedly were normal, all of a sudden those things just went like, really, really, don't, you know, you can't control the weather. Don't, let's not talk about it. So
true.
It is true.
And there's this whole thing. And one of the things I love about that you said also was that the pen was heavy to lift and then it became a wand of healing.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's really important, that we all have to, in grief, find our wands of healing.
Yes. And for everybody, it's different. And yet there's the kind of thing you come back to are that's so common is like, we have to find a way to move and be in this new world, which of course will never be the same as the world we knew before. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've heard, I'm sure, Kelly, people say, well, you're mourning the loss of that person you loved, but you're also mourning the loss of who you were vis-a-vis that person. And I remember saying, I don't know who I am in the world without him.
Well,
I still kind of feel that way.
Of course.
Yeah, I still, you know, I'm still, yeah. I'm sorry. Sorry, I thought of it. No. Sorry, but it's true. It's true. You know, yeah. Your children, I mean, from the second they open their eyes on your belly and look into your eyes, those are the eyes of another soul with a beating heart who's been part of your beating heart forever. And it's unfathomable to think that I would, how could I know who I was without ever looking in those eyes again?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we say it's not in the natural order of things for parents to go before, or children to go before their parents. And it's really not.
No.
It's the thing that we don't, you know, it's the unspeakable, it's the unfathomable, it's the biggest fear. And so it is, you know, I'm very aware of that too, that it's like, I miss you, Dustin. I want you here. I don't want you gone. But it's also like, I don't know how to be. So it is also, you know, to be honest, I think it took me a long time to admit that, but it's like, I don't know how to be. I don't know how to be. I don't know how to be. And I was terrified. And the panic attacks that came, and so much happened that I had never experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
And poetry, you see, my friend who put the pen in my hand, she knows me. And when she put the pen in, she's like, you're a writer, right? Sherry, everything you've said to me on the phone, every time I talk to you, every time I come, what you're talking to me, Sherry, you're talking in poems. And that's how you're talking right now. And I'm like, my, you know, and of course, I've been told that before, you know, I said, you know that you're talking to talk the way you talk. and she said to me, I want to know what you're going through. And I think she gave me a purpose. I think she gave me someone to write for. Of course, we laugh all the time now. And she goes, I really didn't want to know.
because you said that it's not a book you want anyone to read.
No.
They've experienced it.
Exactly. And it's a book I never wanted to write. But I can honestly tell you, Kelly, I'm so glad that she put that pen in my hand. And poetry spoke to me because it's not linear. There's fragments. I don't even call them poems. I call them moments.
Yes.
You know, but it's structured. And, you know, the poet in me, you know, I didn't just blurb it out on the page. I mean, I did at first, and then I took my journals and I chose things and we sculpted them and I worked really closely with an editor. And of course, there's so much that didn't go in. And that's the other things people go, you know, I don't know how you had the courage to do this. And I'm not so sure it was courage as much as if I hadn't, where would I ever find the courage to go on? So it did give me a purpose. I had somebody to write for. I had an editor who said, if you do that, I will hold space for you. And so I had two midwives, certainly, to the process that I went through. And it was incredibly healing, as all creating is, right?
Right.
And we create, I believe in the healing power of narrative and telling the stories and to heal is to whole, right? Like it goes back to that sense of gathering yourself, regathering, and bringing together some sort of wholeness again from that.
And then you have to learn to walk in the world again.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's one thing to sort of reconcile things within yourself in your cocoon.
Right. But
yeah. And you have a public persona, plus you live in a small town, a small area, very well known. You can't be anonymous in your grief.
No. And
was that helpful or hurtful?
It was weird. I wanted to go away. I didn't want to be Sherry Fitch. I was cleaning my office the other day, Kelly, and I'd put the basket full of condolence letters up on the high shelf, and I was dusting and I brought it down and I just looked at that basket and I looked at all the beautiful notes and letters. And I think I was luckier in some ways because it was public, and so many people whose kids had grown up with my books, who, you know, people I never knew were like, you've given us so much joy. You know, we hold you in our prayer and our thoughts. So there's a double part to that. At one sense, you just want to bury your head and go away and not go out in the world. And I didn't actually go out very often for the first couple of months, but there were things like a radio interview and that I did because a book had come out. I wasn't going to. Should I do that? Can I do that? But the book was about mental health, and that book had been commissioned by the Mental Health Association, and it was because of Dustin that I wrote that book. And so, and he'd seen it before he die too. So I felt like it was one way to honor Dustin too, right? It was, so let's do that. But I chose, you know, after that to kind of retreat for a very long time. And I think you need both. You need people who come and show up. And you also need your quiet. I mean, you're a I feel that I am a contemplative. Like I as a writer, I spend a lot of time in solitude. I spend a lot of time in silence. And even though people go, like, it's hard to believe, if I didn't do that, I couldn't write. You know, I really do. But the thing you say about going back into the real world, I have a poem. Do you want me to read that?
I would love it.
Would you want me? I was just thinking, maybe I should read this poem because maybe it would explain better than what I'm trying to burble out here to you.
Oh no, that would be lovely.
It's about the first time I went to get groceries. And again, I'm sure your listeners know, isn't it seem crazy that, you know, you're a 60-year-old woman and all of a sudden, or 62-year-old woman, and all of a sudden you are afraid to go get groceries. And part of that is, like you said, I didn't want to run into somebody. I didn't know if I would come completely undone in the middle of the grocery store. And so what I did, Kelly, is I chose a superstore like almost to Halifax, but like 3 hours away from here. And I'm like, I don't know anybody in that community. I'll just go up there and then I won't run into anybody I know. So that's what I did. So this poem comes from that. I'm going to the superstore in a stupor, Superstore. Haha, I'm a riot. I choose a superstore an hour away where no one will know me. Get out of the car, get halfway to the entrance, run back to the car. Maybe you saw me with my head on the steering wheel. Maybe you saw me trying to breathe. Maybe you saw me driving the roads. Maybe you saw that wild woman behind the windshield with the contorted face. Oh, how many of us wailing ones are driving around in cars because we can scream and scream and scream inside a safety dome, inside a cone of pining. It's okay, says my mother. Say, good job, I got that far, and next time you'll get to the door. Go in, get through the aisles, all the way to the cash. You will buy groceries again. So next try, I get in. I find it hard to focus in the aisles, especially near the pharmacy section. I'm saying underneath my breath as I put in my debit card, I did it, I did it, I did it. And then there's a tap on my shoulder. It's the cashier behind me. I know her. And she says, I am so sorry for your loss. And she holds me and we weep. And I say, I just got groceries for the first time. Maybe you saw her. The brave, brave woman who knew how much I needed a hug. The one not afraid to weep in front of her customers. I think of her often, for I think, yes, that's what we need. A world of people reaching out no matter what, damn the protocol, saying, I love you. I love you. I love you. Remembering it will never be business as usual. And me forgiving over and over those who forget or simply cannot face this wild unraveling.
I just love it so much.
Thank you, Kelly. I you know, it's weird when you pick up your own book and you get emotional reading your own words.
Yeah, but that's how you know it works, because that's a universal reading to me.
I think so too. And I think and that whole thing about people being afraid of what they are going to say to you and not knowing what to say. And one of the most beautiful things, Kelly, that happened to me is I could, you know, there's that weirdness of, oh, there she is. Oh God, I haven't seen her since she lost her son. Oh, I haven't seen that person since I lost Dustin. Oh, are we going to talk? Like, is she going to, you know, there's just, that happens. You know that people are awkward seeing you for the first time. And from my point of view, I always wanted somebody to say, how are you doing? Like I wanted to acknowledge it. There were a couple of times that people would be like, hi Sherry, how are you? Like, and I'm like, I know we both know that this is not like normal. And then I come home and I'd say to Jill, they didn't say, I'm sorry about, I wanted to say his name. I wanted to say Dustin, you know, and so the people who acknowledged it, it was really important for me. And maybe somebody else, Kelly, wouldn't like that, but I wanted that acknowledged. I felt it was important if you're going to have connections with human beings and you're in real time. And this one woman, you know, we had that awkward moment and she looked right at me and she said, Sherry, tell me what to say. And I just started to cry. And I said, you already said it. You know, she didn't say, I don't know what to say. She didn't say, I'm sorry for you. She said, Sherry, just tell me what to say. And that said everything to me, you know, that she knew there were no words and she was in an awkward place. She was helpless, right? And she gave me, you know, tell me what to say. I just, I'll never forget that. And it was a graceful thing to do.
Mm. And these are the little gifts that we cling to, like life preservers, I guess, in that sea of uncertainty and sorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the, you know, where are your touchstones, kind of literally, what are your touchstones? I mean, and sometimes just the words that people say can be those touchstones. Mm-hmm. So look, I had another card come in the mail, you know, all these beautiful notes. And there was one card that was it was just plain. I think there was a little tiny, tiny bird on the outside. And I opened it up and it was blank. And the only words inside were, I am by your side. And then I saw who it was. And that day I opened that card, those simple words were everything. It was like, yes, I understand. I think he is by my side. Mm. I am not alone in this. You know, there are people praying and holding you in thought. And again, grief is solitary. Nobody can go through it for you or with you, really. It's a very lonely road. But knowing there are people who hold you in thought, I found incredibly, I can tell you, Kelly, I will, the rest of my life, I will be writing condolence cards.
Yes.
I feel like all the times that I didn't, like I'm thinking, oh, I, you know, because I know for me, they were just so, so comforting. And I hope, and this is what's happening now with this book. I remember saying to someone, well, I guess I've done joy and sorrow. I guess that's what I'm going to be doing the rest of my life. And they said, no, Sherry, joy and comfort. Mm. And I was like, ah, okay. That's, I did, because the book is so harsh in so many ways. It's so real. It's so unsanitized in terms of I didn't pretty up the, there's a lot of four-letter words and a lot of words that you know, people go, I can't believe you shared that. I'm like, well, I'm not going to not be real. I kept a lot out that I wouldn't put in. But I think that notion of comforting others, when somebody says it comforted my sister-in-law, it comforted. And but I always tell people, if you're going to get the book for someone, please give it with a caveat. Like say, this might not, it might not be the right time for it. But there might be a day that it does, you will, you know. And I think the thing about a book is you can pick it up and you can open it and you can close it really fast too. So you're in control of that. I know people gave me books, Kelly, and there were some that spoke to me and some that didn't. And and one of them, the two that spoke the loudest to me were the ones that were written in the rawness of the aftermath of the grief. It was in the agony of it. Mm-hmm. They spoke the loudest to me when I was in the agony of it. And I thought, yeah, if I'm going to do this, I am going to be as real as I can be.
And do you remember the books that you found most helpful for you?
Oh, yes, I do. One was called Lament for a Son. And there's quite a story behind that. I was in, we opened the bookshop that summer. I didn't want to. My husband said, we got to, honey. This is like, it's 9 weeks and you know how much Dustin loved it and how much work he put into it. He wouldn't want you not to. And it's right across the road from my house. So I knew I had a safe place to run to if I wasn't having a good moment, mm-hmm. or a manageable moment, let me put it that way. And, you know, she came in and she was kind of behind a few people and I saw her waiting. And then she said, you don't know me, but I know you. I read my books to, you know, my children. And she said, I brought you a book. And she said, somebody gave this to me when my son died 17 years ago. And it's time for me to pass it on. And I'm passing it on to you. And it was called Lament for a Son by Nicholas Wolsterstoff. I think I'm saying his name right. And his son had died in a mountain accident. And it was the agony of a father pining for his son. He talked more about his son than I did about Dustin in this book. I didn't want to violate Dustin, even his privacy, even in his death. And so, you know, it's not like me telling Dustin's story. It's actually just the thing was, is that he was a father, and not that a father can't feel that. Of course, the father feels that grief just as deep, but it was different, right? And I wanted, to me, it was my womb that was weeping, yes. My body, not just the other things. It was felt so deeply in my body. You give birth, you know. So I had to find my own way to articulate that. But that gave me courage. And the other one was C.S. Lewis, A Grief Observed. And when his wife died, and he wrote in, at first when he published it anonymously because he didn't want anyone to know. I mean, and I mean, that was a man with a towering intellect. And, you know, he let that all go and wrote from that deep wound. And that's what I would say. It's writing from the wound and the womb in my case. And, yeah. It's not like any other writing I have ever done, but those two gave me permission, those two books, and so did the poem by Rilke that starts the book, Let This Darkness Be a Bell Tower. And there's a line in there, and you be the bell, And as you ring, what batters you becomes your strength. And wow, when I read that, I just was like, okay. I believe you, Rilke. I believe you. If that's true, then I'll become the bell. I will write. I will do that. And he asked that question. He asked it very directly in that poem. He goes, what is it like, this intensity of pain? And I'm like, I'll try to answer that. I'm going to try to answer that with my words back to you, you know. So that incredible poem was like a door opener for me. It was like, I felt like it was written. Oh, that poem was written. It was written right for me so that I would find this courage right now to find a way to go forth. And so those magical things that happen, and I use the word magic because I never knew that woman, and she did more for me by putting that book in my hand than, you know, people that I knew who were really close to me, who were helpless in some ways to know what to do. But she made a trip, a 5-hour trip, and came and put that book in my hand. And I'm amazing. Forever grateful. Yeah, it is. And I, you know, because she knew.
Sherry, thank you so much for talking with me.
You're so welcome. Thank you. It's been very good for me.
Oh, I'm glad. And well, and your book's been very good for so many. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
This conversation is brought to you by the When You Die Project. From existential afterlife questions to palliative care and the nuts and bolts of green burial, if it has to do with death, we're talking about it. WhenYouDie.org.